Beloved Bhagwan, on one occasion, Rinzai said, followers of the way, you seize upon words from the mouths of old masters and take them to be the true way, saying, these good masters are wonderful, and I, simple-minded fellow that I am, don't dare measure such old worthies. Blind idiots, commented Rinzai, you go through your entire life holding such views, betraying your own two eyes. It is only the great master who dares to disparage the Buddhas and patriarchs. From olden days, our predecessors never had people anywhere who believed in them. Only when they had been driven out did their worth become recognized. If they had been completely accepted by people everywhere, what would they have been good for? Therefore it is said, the lion's one roar splits the jackal's skulls.
Manisha, there are few essential things which make Zen absolutely different from any religion, any sect. Any kind of discipline, teaching, the most important of these essentials is that Zen is a revolution. All other religions are servants to the vested interests. The rich people and the powerful people, the politicians, have dominated all the religions. The priests have been nothing but servants to these criminals. It is such a worldwide conspiracy that no one recognizes it. It is so obvious and so simple that we are from the very beginning, from our very childhood, are being programmed. And this programming is done with all the good intentions in the world. The parents love you, but their love is as unconscious as they are. The parents want you to follow the same path as they have followed and their forefathers. Neither they have come to know the truth, nor their forefathers. Just old words. They go on teaching to the small children who are absolutely in a helpless situation. they cannot prevent them. They are dependent on them for food, for clothing, for their whole life. And secondly, they do not know what is being done to them, taking them to the temples, to the mosques, to the churches, to the synagogues. They feel happy. They don't know that they are being enslaved in a very subtle way. They rejoice because all their parents, their neighborhood, their society rejoices. They don't even question what is being put into their minds. They had come with a clean slate. But every moment something is being written on the clean slate. The universities are slaves, the colleges are slaves, because they depend for their existence on the government money. So the politicians dominate. Just now, because Ronald Reagan is against Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, being a fundamentalist, fascist Christian, he can see that either the world was created, that is the Christian standpoint, that the world was created in its wholeness. There is no question of evolution. But Charles Darwin's tremendous inquiries show that there is evolution. The world is not created completely. It is always incomplete and evolving. It is none of the business of any government to prevent new ideas to be placed before the students. Now Ronald Reagan has banned Charles Darwin from America. His books on evolution has been burned from library to library, from university to university. Now even to take his name is a crime. When Galileo for the first time wrote in his book that the old idea of the sun moving around the earth is only common sense, it is not truth, it only appears so. The truth is just the contrary. The earth moves around the sun. Now it was against the statements of the Bible. And Bible is the word of God. And God can never commit mistake, what to say about God. Even the Pope is infallible. And he is a very far away relative to God. He does not commit, cannot commit any mistake. And particularly when God has made himself the world, he knows better than Galileo that whether the sun is moving around the earth or the earth is moving around the sun. Galileo was old, almost on his deathbed. He was dragged to the Pope's court and he was forced to change the statement. He tried to persuade the court that I am also a Christian. I am not an atheist. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus. But this is a scientific fact. And a small fact which has nothing to do with religion. The Pope said it has much to do with religion. If one thing is wrong in the Bible, then people can start thinking, who knows, other things may be wrong also. We cannot allow anything to be wrong in the Bible. It is the very truth. You have to change, otherwise face death. Galileo said, death I am facing anyway. But just for your joy, I will change the statement. But remember, I will have to make a footnote. The Pope did not ask what footnote. He said, you just change the statement and whatever footnote you want to write, write. Galileo did a great job. He changed the statement and underneath in the footnote he said, whatever I say, it makes no sense. The earth still goes around the sun. Who am I to decide? Now these all kinds of primitive minds fear its gods, its greed of heaven, its fear of hell is being imposed continuously on the child, and it is continued in the educational systems. No educational system exists in the world at this moment which can be called not creating slaves but rebels. And the world is full of slaves. You will be able to understand Zen and Rinzai, their tremendous effort to bring the rebel into the world. To create a religion which is also rebellion. Of course, Every rebellion has to be against the past. The common masses think that more ancient a scripture is, more truer. They fight. There is scholars continuously argue that our scriptures are more ancient, and they don't understand the simple thing that the more ancient a scripture is, the more primitive it is going to be, and more fallible, and more stupid. Because man's consciousness has been continuously growing, objectively in science, subjectively in energy fields like Zen, this statement will shock the priests and the so-called religious people. But it is absolutely true. He says on one occasion, followers of the way, you seize upon words from the mouths of old masters and take them to be the true way, saying these good masters are wonderful, and I, simple minded fellow that I am, don't dare measure such old worthies. It is thought to be all that is old is gold. It is not always the case. It may be just gold plated. Simply polished to look like gold. Truth has nothing to do with being old or new. In fact, it is always the new, because consciousness is continuously growing and finding more and more space and new mysteries. The same attitude existed with scientists in the early days of science growth 300 years before, when it started growing as a separate world from religion. They had still the mind of the fanatic, and they started using the same mind about scientific truths, that these truths are eternal. It is only in this century with Albert Einstein that it became clear that not even scientific truths are eternal. Those truths only show our limitations. If we have better eyes and better instruments, we will be able to see much more, which will destroy the old principles. And now the situation is such that science is growing with such vastness, such a speed, that you cannot write a big volume on scientific research. Because by the time your big volume will be finished, it will be out of date. So science has to depend now on papers, periodicals. The moment you find something, you have immediately to publish it in scientific journals or papers, because the next month nobody knows. Somebody may find and will make you out of date. Rinchai is saying that people think anything that has come upon from the mouths of old masters, in the first place you cannot decide who is the master unless you encounter him. Old masters may be just fiction, just an idea that has been implanted in you, and it has gone so deep in your consciousness that you don't question it. Millions of people are worshipping such superstitious things, and they don't ask a question. And if you raise a question, you will be dragged to the court that you have hurt somebody's religious feeling. Truth is not important. Some idiot's religious feeling, and that idiot cannot be religious in the first place. How he can have religious feeling? But the masses go on carrying the dead. Now there is no way to prove, no evidence that these people were enlightened, that what they have said is true. They may have been just poets, they may have been just good writers, may have been good philosophers, clever and articulate, but because the person is not present, it is very difficult to see his aura, it is very difficult to feel his presence, it is very difficult. If the master is dead, to find out in his words anything living. The words are alive when they are just coming fresh from the empty heart of the master. And their life is very sad. Just for a moment, if you are receptive, they may enter into your being. If you start thinking about them, by that time they will be dead. It is an immediate transmission. So the old masters just because they are old and worshipped by many people for many centuries, does not make any sense. Rinzai is saying to his followers, followers of the way, you seize upon words from the mouths of old masters and take them to be the true way. Saying these good masters are wonderful, and I, simple-minded fellow that I am, don't dare measure such old worthies. How I can question? How I can measure? I am an ordinary man, and these are extraordinary people. Some have claimed that they are prophets of God. Some have claimed that they are messengers of God. Some have claimed that like Jesus, that he is the only begotten Son of God. They are very rare people. How can you question them? You are an ordinary human being. But the truth is, all these prophets and messiahs and messengers of someone who does not exist, are exploiting people. What they say are their words, but they are hiding behind a mask of being a prophet. These people who have claimed to be prophets are psychologically sick. Just to be human, purely and utterly intelligent, with an empty heart to experience the world, is enough. You don't have to be a prophet. You don't have to be a messenger, a peygamber, a messiah. But this strategy of being a prophet, a messiah, a messenger is to make their own statements authoritative. They are speaking in the name of God. And unfortunately, God does not exist. I am not in agreement with Friedrich Nietzsche, who said that God is dead. He said really a great thing, but I don't agree, because God has never been born. How he can die? God is only accumulated fear of humanity. Man feels so insecure, surrounded by death, surrounded by all kinds of anxieties and anguishes of the world. He needs psychologically a protector, somebody there above whom he can pray in times of difficulties, on whom he can rely who will be just and compassionate and merciful. Man has projected all these ideas on a hypothesis of God. And there are egoistic people who can proclaim, I am the prophet. I have been sent especially by God to deliver the message, but the message is so rotten that it proves that it is not even written by a good writer. Just look at your Puranas. They are so filthy, pornographic, but no Hindu ever inquires that God writes pornography. They are obscene. Quran or Bible or Hindu Puranas, they look so childish, they don't have the polish, sophisticated look even of a great writer like Leo Tolstoy or Fyodor Dostoevsky. They are written by uneducated people. Muhammad could not write. He was absolutely uneducated. So whatever he has said has been written by his followers. Jesus was uneducated, a carpenter's son, poorest of the poor. He could not read or write, but he has gathered from meetings of rabbis, listening to the rabbis in the synagogues, and must have been a megalomaniac, proclaiming himself that I am the only begotten Son of God. But not a single statement shows any originality. It is simply repetition of the old. But people go on believing in them, neither asking their credentials nor bothering that their claims show a certain psychological sickness, that they want to be known as superior to human beings. And their acts so that they are not even human. Muhammad married 9 women. Now it will create a chaos in the world, and he has put in Quran that every Mohammedan's birthright is to marry 4 women at least. Now in nature, the proportion of men and women is equal. Nature knows how to keep the balance. The psychologists became aware after First World War and more aware after Second World War that nature is not unintelligent. There is some great intelligence functioning behind. Because in the wars many men died. The proportion, the balance was disturbed. There were many more women than the men. And after both the wars, more boys were born than ever. Ordinarily, if 100 girls are born, 114 boys are born. Because boys are not, as you think, more strong than women. They are more fragile. They are more prone to be sick. So by the time they get married, 14 boys have already died. And the balance comes equal, 100 girls, 100 boys. But after the World War, suddenly that gives an indication that nature wants to keep the balance. The centuries old, 100 girls, 114 boys simply change. After the war, 140 boys, 150 boys against 100 girls. Because the old proportion has to be restored. And if every man starts marrying four women, what about the three men who will be left without women? Do you think they will just sit silently doing nothing and let the grass grow by itself? They will corrupt the whole society. For them, you will have to manage prostitutes. They will create all kinds of sexual perversions. And you will have to be too protective to your wives. Because the fear that there are three persons around who are unmarried and there is every danger. You cannot love four wives equally. You must have one wife you love more. Four wives will not be equally beautiful either. There will be constant conspiracy and constant jealousy and constant fighting in four wives to possess the husband. So the home life will be a continuous struggle, and outside you have left three persons in search of a woman. Now, this kind of message God will send? And if you say to Mohammedans that this is absolutely stupid, God cannot commit such a mistake. He himself created one man, one woman. That is a sure proof he wants to keep the balance. He created Adam and Eve. He did not created four Eves. One was enough to destroy Adam's peace. One was enough to drag him out of heaven. God has to force them in a small school. The school teacher was asking to the boys, "Can you relate the story of God becoming angry because of the disobedience of Adam and Eve?" One boy stood up and he said, "Everything is clear. Just one thing I don't see how to manage, because in the books nothing is written about it. It says God drew them out of paradise." The little boy was asking, "In which kind of car? It must have been a Ford. But were there cars in those days in Eden? He drove them out, and driving certainly implies that there was some vehicle." The boy was asking, "What kind?" "But he has created only one woman and one man. That is enough proof that existence needs a certain balance. This idea of Muhammad was only an emergency. It is not a dictation from God, and it is not forever to be true. It was only a particular situation in Saudi Arabia where there were more women and less men. Because men were continuously fighting, so the proportion has come to the such a situation that unless one man marries four women, three women will remain unmarried, and that will create trouble. So it is simply a matter of a certain situation. It cannot be made a principle for eternity. But even now, far away from Arabia, in India, even the Indian constitution accepts it that a Mohammedan can marry four women. Now Mohammedans cannot find four women themselves, though they have to abdicate from other people's wives, daughters. And you will be surprised to know that even though they have got a separate country, in the name that they cannot live with Hindus. They want a separate land of their own. Now the country is divided in three countries: Bangladesh, Pakistan, Hindustan, and still India has the greatest Mohammedan population in the whole world. No other country has this big population. From where this big population is coming? If one man marries four women, naturally he can create four children in a year. If four women marry one man, that will not do. I mean, if four men marry one woman, still there will be one child. The otherwise will not work. I committed mistake. I am not infallible. You should remember that I am neither a prophet nor a messiah. I don't accept any god. I am just myself. Why I should be a prophet or a messiah in the service of some hypothetical god? I am not a postman. All these prophets are postmen. But they think they are very great. Rinchai is saying that this superstitious idea has to be dropped. He is very clear. He says, blind idiots, commented Rinzai, you go through your entire life holding such views, betraying your own two eyes. It is only the great master who dares to disparage the Buddhas and patriarchs. From olden days, our predecessors never had people anywhere who believed in them. Only when they had been driven out did their worth become recognized. If they had been completely accepted by people everywhere, what would they have been good for? Therefore it is said, the lion's one roar splits the jackal's skulls. A very significant statement, very unique. He is saying, if you are accepted by everyone, that simply means you belong to the mediocre masses. You are a Mahatma Gandhi. You are not a Socrates. A man of truth is bound to be burnt alive or stoned or poisoned or crucified, because he will stand against the masses and their consolations. He will say things which are not contained in their scriptures. He may even contradict their scriptures. You can see as an existential example, I have not done any harm to anybody in my life, but I am condemned all over the world for the simple fact that I will not accept any lie as a consolation. Consolation is only for the cowards. It is good for the mediocre. The man of truth is bound to contradict many superstitions which you have been hanging around for centuries. And as time has passed, they have become more precious. The man of truth, the man of experience, of enlightenment, is bound to contradict many of your so-called religious leaders. Rinzai is saying even that if anything Buddha says, even Buddha, and he is a follower of Buddha, even if Buddha says something which does not conform with my experience, I am going to contradict him. And this has been Zen's tradition, a very living tradition. They will worship Buddha. They will offer songs and flowers to Buddha's statue. But as far as their experience is concerned, if Buddha goes against it, then they don't care. They trust their own consciousness, and if it comes to this point, they will have to contradict even Gautam Buddha. This ordinary people cannot understand. They think either you worship Buddha or you don't. But Rinzai is saying you can love and yet you may not agree. Buddha is a personality really worth loving. No man of that grandeur has passed on the earth. But that does not mean that he is infallible. He has committed many mistakes. And the man of experience will expose him. Although he follows him and loves him, respects him, has tremendous gratitude, but that does not mean that anything that is not right should be overlooked. He is saying it is only the great master who dares to disparage the Buddhas and patriarchs from olden days. Our predecessors never had people anywhere who believed in them. Zen does not want anybody to be a believer. Either experience or just go home. Except experience, no belief is going to help. So those who have followed Zen masters were not followers. They were fellow travelers. They were rejoicing in the master's enlightenment. They were drinking as much of his wisdom as possible, and they were finding the path so they can also experience the same lightning experience which dissolves all questions, all answers, and leaves you simply innocent, centered, eternity in your hands. But they were not followers. It is very difficult for ordinary masses to understand. One Hindu monk was traveling with me in the train some 30 years before. And he was very well known in the North India. And he asked me, how many followers you have got? I said, no, I don't have any followers. He said, you don't have any followers? Then in what way people think that you are a master? I said, mastery has nothing to do with followers. Otherwise, the more followers you have, the greater master you are. Then nobody can compete with Pope. He has 600 million Catholics. He is the greatest master. I told him, I have fellow travelers. I have friends. And friendship is giving respect to a person, dignity to a person. Following humiliates. Never be a follower. Because that means you are just a shadow. Just moving on the footprints of somebody else. Not trying to find your own path and your own being. Followers are weaklings. A man of courage finds his own path. He can rejoice in the enlightenment of someone. He can love someone to the extent that he can call him his master. But the master can never call him a follower, only a friend who is just a little behind. Few steps more and he will also become a Buddha. To reduce him to a follower is very insulting and humiliating. But all the religions have done that. They have reduced whole humanity into slaves. From olden days, says Rinzai, our predecessors never had people anywhere who believed in them. They discouraged people to believe in them. They encouraged people to trust in themselves. And that's where the paths of all the religions become separate from Zen. They are all trying to gather more converts, more Hindus, more Catholics, more Mohammedans. It is a political game. It is not religion. Have you seen when Pope came to India, the President and the Prime Minister of India were present to receive him? They don't come to receive any Shankaracharya. They don't come to receive any Acharya Tulsi. They don't come to receive any Mohammedan Sufi. What is special about Pope? He has 600 million people behind him. He has a tremendous political power. But Zen is not interested in political power. It has a totally different kind of power, the power of love, that does not reduce you into a slave, into a shadow, but raises you up to the same state of being in which the master is. Buddha is reported to have said, I will not be satisfied unless all those who have been with me become Buddhas. Less than that will not satisfy me. If you want me to rejoice and celebrate, then don't waste time. Become Buddhas. This is a very human, very respectful approach. And another very important thing he says, before I say it, there was one very important thinker in India, Mahatma Bhagwan Din. Only two persons were known as Mahatma, Mahatma Gandhi and Mahatma Bhagwan Din. But Mahatma Gandhi was a politician. All his gestures were just to catch voters. Mahatma Bhagwan Din was an independent thinker. It was just coincidence. I used to meet him once in a while in some conference or somewhere, and he loved me. The day he died, I was present in Nagpur. Just coincidence, I had been coming from a lecture tour from Chanda, Bardha to Nagpur. Just as I was going into the Nagpur University to speak, somebody told me that Mahatma Bhagwan Din is almost on the verge of death. So I dropped the lecture and I went to see him. He has become absolutely a skeleton. He held my hand and he told me, "It is good that you have come. So unexpected. Just one thing I always wanted to say to you and I have never said to. Now there is not much time, I should say it. You will have to live a life of persecution. You will be condemned by millions. Because whatever you say goes against the mass mind. But he said, "Don't change your path. Whatever happens, even a crucifixion happens, it does not matter. What matters is that truth should be proclaimed." Rinzai is saying, when these old masters had been driven out, did their worth become recognized? When the masses have stoned them, thrown them out of the crowd, spread all kinds of lies and rumors about them, only then they were recognized. If they had been completely accepted by people everywhere, what would they have been good for? Rinzai is making a very pregnant statement. If you are accepted everywhere, respected everywhere, it simply means you are good for nothing. It simply means that you are a cunning diplomat. That you go on saying things that appeal to people. That you never say anything that may hurt the mass mind, the retarded people. You don't speak from your heart and your experience, you simply look at the people and you speak what they want to listen. That's what your priests and mahatmas are doing. Whatever you want to listen, they repeat it like a parrot. It is a very vicious circle. You wanted to listen it, They repeated it. They became very respectable to you because they have confirmed your lie as a truth. They have helped your consolation. You will raise them into great Mahatmas and saints. But saints have never been rebellious. I have to make it clear that all your saints were diplomats, clever and cunning. Whatever you wanted, they did. They confirmed your beliefs, howsoever stupid. And they became great in your eyes. And the really great are those whom you have crucified. Their fault was they did not console you. They simply stated the fact, the truth, and that truth is a lion's roar. Rinzai is right when he says, therefore it is said, the lion's one roar splits the jackal's skulls. The ordinary retarded humanity, I call it retarded because it has been found after the First World War at that time the psychologist has discovered to measure intelligence. So they measured the intelligence of soldiers and they were surprised. They were all below 14%. You can have 100% intelligence. 14% is a very retarded intelligence. The Speaker of Indian Parliament, Lok Sabha, was angry with my statement that I said that all these politicians are retarded. He wrote a letter to me that you have insulted the Parliament. You will have to answer, otherwise legal action can be taken against you. I told Neelam, my secretary, to write to the speaker whatever questions he has asked. And in those questions, as a preface, I told her to write that I am ready to bring a group of psychoanalysts to the parliament to check the intelligence of your members. And if it is proved that it is below 14%, you all will have to resign. If it is proved that it is not the truth, they have at least above 14% average, I am ready to suffer any punishment for it. He became silent. I have been waiting almost for 2 years now. He saw the point that I will create a trouble. Those politicians are chosen by ordinary masses. They represent the ordinary. They are not great intellectuals, intelligentsia. And the only way to prove is whether I am right or wrong. Legal punishment will not be decisive. First, a psychological test of the whole Lok Sabha members. And then I am ready. Either they all have to resign, including you, or I am ready for any punishment. There is no need to go to the court. The Lok Sabha itself can decide any punishment. I am perfectly ready for it. But he must have looked at the situation. You know, in your parliament, people throw shoes at each other in argument. They beat people. They have to be dragged by police officers out of the parliament house. All their actions prove that they are retarded people. But clever enough to persuade the masses, because masses are even lower. But his silence is great. His silence proves he understood the point that it will be a worldwide uproar if the whole parliament is proved to be retarded. And there is every possibility. He knows every day what goes on happening in the parliament. Rinjais is saying, when they had been driven out, did their worth become recognized? If they had been completely accepted by people everywhere, what would they have been good for? Therefore it is said, the lion's one roar splits the jackal's skulls. One man of ultimate intelligence is enough to drive the whole humanity against him. 21 countries have banned my entry into their countries. It's strange. What I can do in 3 weeks, tourist visa, I'm not a terrorist, I don't carry bombs, I'm against any kind of violence. But whole parliaments, without a single person objecting, decided that not only I cannot enter into their country, I cannot refuel my aeroplane on their international airport. I cannot land even my aeroplane on their airport. And they say that my presence will be disturbing to their morality just on the airport, miles away from the city. My presence will be spoiling the morality, the religion, their way of life, their tradition, their orthodoxy. Just standing on the airport in my aeroplane, in England, which is thought to be one of the most intelligent country, I had to stay only for 6 hours, and I wanted to stay only on the airport lounge, and I had both things. I had my aeroplane, my pilot, and I had also purchased a first class ticket, so they cannot say that the lounge is only for first class ticket people. The chief of the airport was in very embarrassing position. He said, what can I do? The home ministry goes on phoning that this man should not be allowed even in the lounge. He is a dangerous man. I said, you can check my luggage. I am not carrying any bombs. In what way I can disturb the morality of England and their religion? And if their religion and morality can be destroyed so easily, are they worth? He phoned again to the Home Ministry, and the reply was the same, that if I want to stay, I can stay only 6 hours in the jail, but not outside the jail. And I had to stay for 6 hours in the jail, because every pilot has a flying time. That was the difficulty. The flying time of my pilot was over, and it is against flying laws to fly overtime. So the pilot has to rest for 6 hours. And I and my few friends who were traveling with me, they all had to rest in the jail. The same happened in many places. It is now almost one man against the whole world. The Archbishop of Greece, the most ancient church of Christianity, threatened the Prime Minister and the President that if you don't remove me immediately, he will dynamite the house in which I and my friends are living. And we were living on an island. Just for 4 weeks visa, we were not going to stay there, and I have not stepped out of the garden of the bungalow in which I was staying. But the Archbishop of Christian Church, the oldest church, forgets completely about the teachings of Jesus, that you should love your enemy. I am not even a friend. But this is the world we are living in, a world full of slaves with different trademarks, Hindu, Mohammedan, Christian. Zen is a revolutionary statement about religiousness, a Zen poet Ikkyu wrote, "Rain has fallen since dusk, wailing over the Siang River, yet the homeless traveler sings with his whole soul, this blue sea and blue sky hold the essence of my heartbeat." Zen is a religion of beauty. You know the Upanishadic description of the ultimate reality, Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. Either a man can reach to the ultimate by finding the truth of his being, Satyam, or he can reach by finding the divinity of his being, the goodness, or he can reach to the ultimate by finding the eternal beauty of his being. Zen is a religion of beauty. And the strange fact is that if you can get one, the other two follow automatically. If you attain to truth, Satyam, then Shivam and Sundaram will follow automatically. They are one thing looked from three standpoints. Because beauty is the heartbeat of Zen it has been more creative it has created great poetry great paintings it has transformed ordinary things like archery or swordsmanship into meditation It is not a non-creative religion. It has created and added to the beauty of existence Manisha has asked a question Beloved Bhagwan Can only other enlightened beings or people who are yet to come be contemporaries of a master? Yes, Manisha. Because enlightenment is beyond time. So all enlightened people are contemporaries. The distance between time does not matter at all. At that peak that is rising beyond time, whoever reaches The distance between two persons may be 25 centuries or 5,000 years. That distance is in time. That distance is a measurement of the mind. And enlightenment is both beyond time and mind. Hence, only Enlightened people can be contemporaries. The unenlightened has the potential to explode into enlightenment, and this very moment he will be moving in the world of the Buddhas. This very moment, he will find himself standing beside Gautam Buddha and Rinzai. I am reminded of a small anecdote. In Zorba, the Buddha Rajneesh restaurant in heaven, Gautam Buddha, Confucius, and Lao Tzu. Are all sitting around a table and a very beautiful young sannyasin carrying a very beautiful jar comes along and asks, would you like to have some taste of life? Confucius immediately closed his eyes. And he said, enough is enough. I have lived life and I don't want to do anything with life at all. Buddha said, I would like to have a sip first to see how it tastes. Buddha was always on the middle path. So he took a sip and he said, it is very bitter. Anything the girl was going to say to Lao Tzu, but before she could say, he took the whole jar and drank the whole juice. And he said, unless you drank it whole and total, how can you know? This Confucius is behaving just like an idiot as he used to behave on the earth. Closing your eyes, Buddha is behaving the same way he used to behave on the earth, always the middle path. Unless you know the whole, you don't know. So when you become Buddhas, you will be meeting all kinds of fellows. You will be contemporaries of all the Buddhas of the past. But you carry the potential this very moment. Manisha has asked another question to beloved Bhagwan, are you not the greatest, the most daring iconoclast of all time? Unfortunately, Manisha, I am. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh. Baron Fuzzbutt, a nobleman at the court of King Arthur of Merry England, has a reputation for being very gallant towards women. There is no such thing, he announces one day, as an ugly woman. He is overheard saying this by a woman who has a nose that is really squeezed flat on her face, and she confronts Fuzzbutt, confess the truth, she cries, you are now face to face with an ugly woman. Not at all, madam, replies Baron Fuzzbutt gallantly. You are like all women, an angel fallen from heaven. You were just unlucky that you fell on your nose. Gorgeous Gloria stars dating Rock Hunt, the film star, and soon moves into his penthouse apartment. high above the smog of San Francisco, one evening Gloria comes back from shopping to find that Rock is not at home. Feeling hungry, she looks in the freezer and finds that it is empty. So she goes out to eat at a restaurant. By chance, she goes to the same restaurant where Rock is having a quiet candlelight dinner with Luscious Lucy, another of his girlfriends. Gloria takes one look at the scene and quickly makes her way towards their table. Rock Hunk looks up as Gloria comes storming across the restaurant and then quickly looks away again as though he does not know her. "What is the matter, darling?" snarls Gloria as she reaches the table. "Don't you recognize me with my clothes on?" Lee Rye, the black dude, is sitting up in a tree one day in Central Park, New York, enjoying the view. He is dozing off when a young white couple comes and sits on the park bench below him. The couple start patting and kissing, but before long, they are sprawled on the bench making love. Just then, a policeman walks up and arrests the young couple for indecent exposure. The cop sees Lee Rye sitting up in the tree and drags him along as a witness. The next day, in court, Lee Rye is in the witness stand and the judge says, "Now, Lee Rye, will you tell the court what you saw?" "Yes, Your Honor," cries Lee Rye. "There was a fucking." "Now look here," snaps the judge. "You cannot use language like that or I will hold you in contempt of court. Now tell me again, what were they doing?" "There was a fucking," cries Lee Rye. "Right," says the judge. "I sentence you to 1 month in jail for contempt." A month later, Lee Rye is back in the witness stand and the judge asks him again what he saw. "Your Honor," cries Lee Rye, "there was a fucking." 1 month in later, in jail for contempt, cries the judge, and Lee Rye is taken away. This goes on month after month for the next few years. Finally, when Lee Rye comes back for the 200th time, the judge says, "Look, Lee Rye, I am completely fed up with this case. We are all a lot older now. Surely you can tell me in decent language what happened that day in the park." "Okay, Your Honor," says Lee Rye. "Let me put it like this. His pants was down below his knees. His balls was swaying in the breeze. His, you know what, was you know where. And if that is not fucking, give me the electric chair. Nivedana. Be silent. Close your eyes and feel your body to be completely frozen. Now look inwards with your total life energy, with your whole consciousness, and with a great urgency, as if this moment is the last moment, penetrate into your center of being just like an arrow. There, at the center, you are a Buddha and a contemporary of all the Buddhas. Even this very moment, time has disappeared. Mind has been left behind. You have gone beyond both. This silence, this blissfulness, this utter serenity, only one thing remains: witnessing. Because witnessing is another name of the Buddha. Hold hold on to witnessing, as Nividhana will give you the signal to relax. Nividhana, hold on to the witnessing. You are not the body, you are not the mind, you are just a pure consciousness, an awareness. And as you become deeply aware, your individual entity disappears. This Buddha auditorium really becomes a Buddha lake. I can see your consciousness melting and merging into a lake without any ripples. At this moment, this place is the holiest. Because nowhere in the world 10,000 people are trying to reach to the center. This center has to be brought slowly, slowly to your ordinary activities. The same witnessing, the same silence, the same grace, the same joy, whatever you do around the clock. Remember, you are a Buddha and you have to keep the dignity of a Buddha, and your whole life will be transformed. Now collect as much awareness, as many flowers that have been showering on you, the beauty, the truth, the good. You have to carry them back. This evening was beautiful on its own accord. But the 10,000 Buddhas melting into an ocean has made it a historical moment. There were days in the past where many places this golden moment was happening. Now all those places have disappeared. I am trying to revive a forgotten language. Nividhana, come back, but don't forget that you are a Buddha. Silently, peacefully, carrying a great awareness with you, and remain this awareness 24 hours, slowly, slowly, it will become your very heartbeat. You will not have to remember it. It will be there, just like an undercurrent in all your actions, gestures, words, silences. Collect the experience, remember the golden path that you have gone in and have come out from the same path. Okay, Manisha.